You're listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real-life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
Before we start, I just want to welcome Ola Dantis to the Hooked on Startup show.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be here. So happy.
That's right. Yes, I'm just underwhelmed. There's no beginning to my enthusiasm. But I was just, your story is fascinating. You know, it is the true story of, you know, coming to America with, was it $180 in your pocket? And
yes.
And a few years later, ending up with a multi-million dollar real estate portfolio. So it is, yes, Everyone's dream. But what is really interesting is we went to the same university in England.
We did.
Which is, and I think I was on your podcast a few weeks ago, and it's funny because one of my daughters goes to Birmingham University as well.
It's a great uni.
You know, and it was great because, and this means nothing to anyone unless you've actually been there, but they have the finest Indian cuisine in the world, I think, in Birmingham. Yes.
In Birmingham, correct.
You know, in Moseley in particular, it is the culinary epicenter of Indian cuisine.
I would agree with that.
So the one thing that I miss most about being in the US is just that sort of, you know, fantastic cuisine. But there are some, you know, and sausages as well, proper English sausages. So the two things that I miss.
And a good breakfast.
The Spanish,
right?
Inquisition.
English breakfast, right? They just don't have that over here.
You know, you've got to actually ship the sausages in from, you know, the East Coast or something, and you can't get back bacon. The three things that I miss most, you know, is Indian food, sausages, and back bacon. But that's crumpets you can get, so that's fine. So thank you, Trader Joe's, for that. this episode is not sponsored by Trader Joe's, even though my wife is there right now shopping, not just for crumpets. Good job no one's listening, eh?
Right. Especially our wives.
Yeah, exactly. I think they are. They're gonna come in and, you know, no. What do you think? I'm on a call. But it is, and also there's a little bit of, I think, you know, humor. The company you founded is called Dwellin.
Yes.
And people say, well, where does that come from? Dwellin. Is that Dwellin?
It sounds Welsh, doesn't it? It sounds Welsh.
It's a Dwellin, yes. It's from the valleys, you know. But it's actually, like, no, it's Cockney rhyming slang for a home. It's a dwelling, isn't it? And do people, I get it now, but do you have to explain that to people?
Yeah, definitely. So Lynn, L-Y-N-N, that's actually the end of my wife's name. My wife's name is Wiona Lynn.
Oh, right.
That's where that Lynn comes from. She is British too, of course, but nothing to do with
she
that.
Could be Welsh. I mean, that might be.
And then Dwell is just, you know, kind of, to dwell in the grace of God, to dwell in the peace of God, has been repeated in the Bible, and, you know.
Or to live in a home, to dwell in a home.
Oh, to dwell in a home, of course.
Yes.
That's actually the major reason as well, to kind of combine the two together. So somewhat creative, but not so creative at the same time.
But also, you know, so tell me, when did you, you know, tell me the story, because there's a bit about you getting inspiration. I think you were in Dubai at the time, was that right? And
correct,
you know, and then, yeah, you listened to a podcast and you had this sort of flash of inspiration, this sort of and then
actually a friend of mine was one that took me, a friend of mine was actually doing real estate in the UK, but I love to tell the story the same exact way, because it's always really difficult for people to make that connection from, you know, I remember when I used to listen to podcasts and somebody is talking about how they've just closed a $1 million building, and I just can never connect that person's beginning of the story, right? The genesis, like, how do you do that? So I always like to talk about kind of the genesis. So like you said, I moved, you know, to the US, my wife and I, and shortly thereafter got great jobs, you know, living the American dream, going to work, you know, coming home, going to work, traffic, come back home.
kind of the same, isn't it? The American dream is very similar to the English dream, but the weather's slightly better. Depending on where you live. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. So I was thinking, man, there's got to be something else to this. I mean, I can do this for the next, I don't know if I'm lucky, 50 years and then I die. I mean, it's pretty boring. So I was looking for something else.
But why would you not just be happy with your lot, Ola? You know,
I don't know.
There's nothing wrong with commuting and sitting in traffic. Mind you, in England at the moment, you'd be lucky to do that because I don't think there's any
there's no
gasoline
petrol right
or
now.
Petrol yes. anywhere. It does make me laugh, honestly.
He does. My sister called me from Milton Keynes and she's like, oh, I was able to get a full tank of petrol. I was like, oh, lucky you.
We've got
plenty. Yeah, in Houston where am I? You know, you want to come over. If you want.
Yeah, I just filled up my car and it cost me $4 because this is America. And they have gasoline here. Yes.
So anyway, you know, a friend of mine called me from the UK and said, hey, Ola, do you want to fly to Dubai and meet me there and, you know, kind of help me with my business? And, you know, I've got this business doing really well in London and, you know, I'm going to meet some investors in Dubai. Now, I say this story, not just to say the story, but success never comes in a golden box with a red ribbon, you know, with fireworks and an announcer saying, here is your success coming to you. No, it could be like a phone call like mine, right? And so I did what every wise man does. I prayed about it and I asked my wife, like, hey, you know, my friend called me and said, hey, are you gonna, you know, come to Dubai? And this was years ago, right? Before the pandemic and yeah. Everything is all Zoom now. So she was like, do you want to try Skype? Have you heard of Skype? You know, I mean, why do you have to travel thousands just to have this meeting with your friend? And anyway, long story short, I was on a plane to Dubai, convincing my wife that this was a great idea and I could learn something. And so essentially was, you know, hotel room, very, you know, classic standard, no frills hotel room. You know, we were not like quad biking in the
desert. You mean
desert.
The Burj Al Arab?
I wish. The Bush, not even the Burj Al Arab. I think this was like, yeah, just really class standard hotel, right?
750th floor, presumably, yeah.
And, you know, my friend and I, he was telling me how it was, you know, completely.
Yeah, so when
this
was this? Because I remember, was this at the height of the sort of the Dubai property boom? This was like, was this long, long time ago?
This is probably like 2015, I thought.
Oh, okay. So that was, because Dubai had this huge bump and then, you know, the collapse around, you know, 08, 09. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, I was just kind of helping my friend out at the time, right? Don't forget, I still had that thing at the back of my mind of, hey, you've got to do something else with your life, not just going to a cubicle every single day, right? And I saw you was completing on these transactions, right? As we call it in the UK, complete. We call it close in the US. And I was like, oh my goodness. I was going back on the plane and I was thinking, maybe I could do this property thing in the US, but I knew nothing about
it. How hard can it be, realistically?
You know, this guy's doing it, you know, and he's doing pretty well. So I thought, hey, well, I don't really know anything about properties, but my other best friend does Google. So when I go back to the US, I just started Googling and I stumbled upon Bigger Pockets and then I, you know, got on their podcast.
Because I saw that Joe Fairless is on your board in Dwellin, because I've never met him, but I've been on his podcast, because Joe Fairless is the best real estate investing podcast ever. But when you stumbled across Bigger Pockets, is Joe's part of that as well, I think, isn't he?
No, actually, Joe was pretty prolific on that site in the past, but he doesn't have any stake in that. But obviously, he owns the best ever brand.
So that's right. Yeah, so I'm getting confused. We'll chop this bit out in the edits. Don't worry.
Yeah, of course. But Joe is my mentor, though. We'll talk about that later, and that's why I was the very first guest on my podcast when I started, you know, years ago. So I started Googling and got on Bigger Pockets, you know, got on their podcast and I started from the bottom. This is important too. I'm not just telling the story, just to tell the story. So if you're starting out, this is how you can do it. This is one way to do it.
What makes it so there's a bit missing here. So you're in Dubai, now suddenly you're in the US.
We spent like 3 days in a hotel room with my friend. I had some understanding of his business. So on my way back to the US in the plane, I was like, I think I should do this, right? But like I said, I didn't know.
So you were in the US at that time, sorry.
I was in the US, God. Yes. I just went there. Yes, I was.
Enough coffee.
Yeah, and it's okay. So go back and told my wife, like, hey, I said, I learned a bunch of stuff about property, but I don't know anything about it, but I'm going to learn, right? That's what I do every day. I'm going to learn, right? She's like, okay, whatever. So I listened to the podcast from Bigger Pockets from the bottom all the way to the top. But I noticed something. So on your journey to success, pay attention. Every single guest on the Bigger Pockets podcast always reference a book, Rich Dad Poor Dad.
Robert Kiyosaki, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't know what this book is. But then I went to my second best friend, Amazon. If you want to be successful, that should be your second best friend. You have to read a lot. Anyway, I bought the book from Amazon and I read the book in like supersonic speed, obsessively.
Yes.
And the best way I could describe this, Matt, was after reading that book, I was like, my brain got like a uppercut. Like everything I was trying to like talk to myself about going to work, coming back home, doing it again. It was like, I felt like he stole my idea and put in a book like in 1992, right? I was like, oh my goodness, this is what I've been trying to figure out. So, you know, shortly thereafter, 2-3 months after that, I bought my first property, a duplex in Baltimore, Maryland, not too far from John Hopkins Hospital. And then, as they say, the rest was history. So I'm going to stop there.
And it's a great story. But what, I mean, again, the process of buying a property, particularly when you're making your first investment, that's the hardest thing, I would have thought, because you can either just go for something because you live in Houston, is that right? Or
I now live in Houston. This was in Baltimore, Maryland. So we'll get there.
Yeah. So you bought, presumably you weren't living in Baltimore at the time.
I was living in Baltimore.
Oh, you were. I beg your pardon. Remember, so I was going to say, yes, so that's fine. Because you to buy a property in another state. So what made you choose that property and how did you get the capital together to do that if you didn't already have it? And, you know, what was going through your mind? What made you choose that one property?
Yeah, you asked the best questions, man. So, so that process, that 2-3 months of reading, listening to podcasts, was evidentially like really important, right? Because while I was reading and learning, I realized that, okay, there are different real estate strategies, right? That you can do, right? You can start flipping houses, you can start wholesaling, you can, you know, you can do a bunch of stuff. But I stumbled upon one called house hacking,
yeah,
which means you can buy a duplex or a triplex or a fourplex, which are basically 2-in-1, 3-in-1 or 4-in-1 houses respectively. And you live in one and you rent the others out.
Yeah.
Right. So basically you get a mortgage. And the good thing about America is if you're getting your very first mortgage, all you have to do is put 3.5% down.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, that's not a ton of money unless you buy a $10 million building, right? Which we weren't because we're just buying a tiny little duplex in Baltimore. To answer the second part of your question. So I learned that strategy during my, you know, reading, right? So why did I choose that one property? So my wife and I, we looked at, oh my goodness, a lot of properties, let's say, probably 10 to 15 at least, which were duplexes, triplexes, or, you know. So I use three things mainly, which I still teach to you today. Number one, I look at properties that have what I call a 1% rent to value ratio.
Yeah.
Meaning if I was buying a property for $100,000, the rent should be at least $1,000. So 1%.
Per month, obviously.
Per month, correct, right? So that's one. Second thing, I do not buy in bad areas, right? The crime has to be lowest. And I use Trulia, which is a website in the US, to basically find that out. So I won't buy anywhere that is rough, right? So that's number two. Number three, I always look for some kind of like value add, which means that I can go in, fix up the place and force appreciate that property. Now, this is a little tricky with single family, but what I was trying to buy was when single families were multifamily, right? So this particular property had been, you know, on the market for like 6 months, right? And it was just dated. He had like the original wood flooring, you know. At this time, people went, it wasn't multifamily and house hacking wasn't as hot, right? Yeah. So my wife and I knew quickly, if we buy this thing pretty up, we can increase the rent, right?
Yes.
It was owned by a couple that was living far away in suburbia Maryland.
Yeah.
So we were like, this is it. So we went on, bought it. And then, yeah, as they say, you know, everything worked out. That property, is, I still own it. It's doing fantastically well. It's.
I was going to say now. I mean, if you've, you know,
yeah, I still own
six,
it. Yeah.
7 years later, it's probably appreciating really well. But then where did your journey say once you've got that property? So that transaction went pretty well. So in other words, you've got the property. You've filled it with tenants, presumably. So you've got, you know, the rental income coming in. That's not where you are today. So dwelling is not just one property. So where are you today? And how did you move from that one property? Because, you know, 5 or 6 years is a very short space of time. Tell us more about what today's position looks like.
It's funny you said that because, you know, 5 or 6 years feels like a relatively short time to be able to close on a, you know, 10 million plus deal, which I just did about 2 months ago. Now, it did, when I was living through the 5 years, it felt like forever. Yeah. Like, when am I going to get my big deal done, right? But so after we bought the duplex, any wise person would just go, keep doing this, keep buying more duplex, triplex, you know, but I don't want to, I don't want to, you know, my own too much. I wouldn't say I was wise. So I met a partner who said, hola, let's go flip some properties down the street. You're going to make $50,000. By the way, newsflash, that was a bad idea.
Yeah. So, well, you only know that afterwards, though, don't you?
You did that, right? Vision 20. Yeah. So did that for a couple of years. But actually, before I did that, I heard a podcast just like this, Michael Blanc's podcast. And Joe Fellas was the guest.
Yeah.
And he was talking, you know, about multifamily and buying larger apartments, right? And I thought, oh, wow, I bought a, you know, a small building. It would be nice to buy a 10 unit or whatever. And at the end of the interview, this is also a success hack, right? Remember what I said, never comes in the golden box. And he said at the end, I'm going to give my number, my phone number, you know, but nobody's going to call me anyway. So he gave out his phone number at the end of the podcast. And obviously I called him and I said, hey, Joe, I'm nobody. Yeah. and whatever you charge for, you know, mentoring, I cannot afford it. Just give me a payment plan. Right. And I will pay. And I'm telling people this because the power of the subconscious mind is just absolute, right? The brain takes positive or negative. So if you keep telling yourself, I don't have money, I can't do this.
Yes.
The brain doesn't care. It's eavesdropping in everything you say. Yeah. So I knew that I didn't have money, not because I was telling myself that I saw my account wasn't, you know, I knew I couldn't afford this guy, but I still tried and I got in.
Yeah.
And that was a turning point in my life because now this guy at the time had 100 AUM, which is asset under management at that time. Today he has $1 billion, by the way. And he took me under his wing and showed me everything he was doing.
Yes.
So even though I was learning to buy my apartment, my first large apartment, I got diverted because I met a partner that said, let's go flip some houses. So I flipped some houses for about 2 years or so. Hated it. Different conversation. Did not like flipping. And then went back to continue my mentoring under Joe. But at that time, some of the guys in my cohort, guys and girls in my cohort, were already buying their first 100 unit apartment.
Yeah.
So I lost some time. So but that 5 years could have been compressed, actually, Matt. But I lost those 2 years just messing around with little tiny build and tiny projects.
I mean, there's presumably a ton of valuable experience. I mean, because that and the interesting thing is, I suppose it's quite attractive if you're looking at flipping houses where you were in Maryland. I would imagine there were quite a few relatively low cost houses. So it seems attractive that you think, oh, I can buy this house for $50,000 and how much is it going to cost? And I'll have it for a few weeks and flip it. And so let's explore that for a bit because, you know, you did it for a couple of years. You're sort of glossing over it, but I think there probably are some huge lessons that you learned in what it's like to try and flip houses, because all the TV programs that we see, you know, make it look as if it's a slam dunk every time. So was that your experience?
About the slam dunk, I'll say yes and no. I think most importantly, I knew myself, right? I realized that I didn't have the temperament to flip houses.
Yeah.
It's just not my thing, right? I'm a perfectionist, but I didn't realize this until I was driving all the contractors crazy, like how they didn't paint the corners properly. And, you know, their work was just shabby. And, you know, I was just really annoying because I was there every single day.
Yes.
Right. And I realized this is
which is probably more than the contractors were, presumably.
You already know. I'm getting there in the morning at 6 a.m. Like, where's this guy? He should have started work by now. You know, I've been up since 5. Where is he? Yeah. And he's getting there at 9 o'clock, you know, strolling in. And I'm like, well, what is going on? So, yeah, I drove them crazy. That's number one. Number two is also, you know, the time value, right? Like I said, I was still getting the Facebook feed of my friends buying 100 units apartment. And while I was covered in dust in my shorts in the summer in the hot Baltimore sun, trying to help the contractors with trash. Yes. And my wife, I go into my wife, she's like, what are you doing? Like, like, is this really, you know, how you want to spend your life? Right. So, and I just didn't enjoy it. I didn't enjoy it.
I mean, that's
it wasn't
important,
complex. Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't complex for me. I like complex things. Right. Yes. I realized that. So for me, I decided to just stop. One of the properties that I actually built, which is on my portfolio somewhere, I still own that as well. And we kind of built it from scratch. So I, like you said, yes, there were some experiences, technical experiences in terms of constructions, cost and things like that, and project managing, you know, a project, you know, I did like really just got out project. I didn't do any kind of lipstick on a pig, as they call it. I did all my projects where got out, like take everything out and start again with architects and planning and things like that. So that was great. But it was just, like I said, it just wasn't my thing. Now I'm looking at, you know, quotes of like 100,000, 50 for roofs and things like that. So that's, it's a little bit different. But some of those experiences does help somewhat.
And you say that you're attracted more to complex things. Is that the, I suppose, the sort of cerebral challenge that you didn't get when you're building? I suppose you're in at the grassroots level, but so your background in Birmingham, I think you sort of read, was it business studies and you got a master's?
No, I actually read biomedical science for my first degree, and then I got a scholarship to go to the business school down the road to study strategic marketing and consulting.
So presumably that what was really interesting to you when you were seeing all of your fellows in the cohort doing these deals is the complexity of the deals.
Correct.
The multiple moving parts from a funding perspective, from a legal perspective, structuring, syndication. So that's presumably, if you can be the savant, as it were, that can see
the
through
orchestra.
That.
Right.
So is that what brought you sort of closer to these bigger deals?
Yes. And it's really fascinating because now the deal we just closed, like I said, you know, I told you before we hit recording, is just plus, you know, just above $10 million.
Yeah.
And you feel the magnitude, right? And I always tell people as well, you feel in like a gross insufficiency of you because it's such a big project, right? It's not like you standing in your flip project by yourself telling the contractors what to do. This is bigger than yourself. We've got lawyers, we've got contractors. I mean, just the pre-closing, it's just a lot of people. Like I got probably over 3,000 emails that was copied on. So it's just, you can just feel the magnitude, right?
But the important thing, and presumably the success of these projects, is entirely dependent on the ability for you to project manage all of those people. Because
100%.
Like an orchestra, as you were saying earlier, without the conductor, it doesn't matter how good the first violinist is, if it comes in at the wrong time.
Exactly. And if I don't make sure that my lawyer doesn't say the wrong thing to my brokers before we actually get the deal on the contract, because he's going to kill the deal. So not only am I managing my lawyer, but I'm also managing my broker's ego.
Yes.
All at the same time. But also just understanding the dynamism of my team.
Yes.
And knowing how to move people around, and have to, you know, the beauty of words, right? I tell people, this is like very, like, these are very esoteric element that people don't focus on, but quite important to get a deal from start to finish. I mean, a deal like ours, 100%.
And how did you stumble across, or how did you, apologies for that, how did you find this deal? So again, you're fixing and flipping houses in Baltimore. You've obviously become inspired by listening to Joe Fairless, and you became part of his mentoring program. So you've got a certain amount of information, but, you know, information is only as good as, you know, the person that executes it. So how did you take that information, that idea, and how did you execute that? How did you put the wheels into motion so that you could start playing in a much bigger ballpark?
That's such a good question. So as part of our cohort, we can all partner with each other. So I partner with some GPs, general partners, that's what we call them, and they were investing in Houston, Texas. So I was, you know, I partnered on the deal. Deal went great. As a matter of fact, I think they're trying to sell that deal right now. So going through full cycle. But I was still in Maryland, in Baltimore at the time, just finishing up my second, you know, I think, yeah, my second project at the time. And I was like, maybe we could actually move to Texas. I was telling my wife this because I was struggling to find really good yep. deals in Baltimore. But not only finding good deals, but finding investors who cared for Maryland and especially yes. Baltimore.
Yes.
When I spoke to them, they're like, oh, I really like Texas right now. So I'm like, I think I should be in Texas. I bring up this because this is really important. So I told my wife yet again, let's pack up. Remember, we moved from in suburban Maryland to Baltimore in the city where we could never find parking. So this new building we just bought. Now I'm like, baby, I think it's Texas. I think that's where it's at right now.
So do you think your wife should probably get all the applause and
I think she
applaud
should.
It for your success? Not.
And she's like, again, I'm like, I promise you, this is the last time. So, you know, this is really important. We, you know, left all our, in our properties, which we still own them in Baltimore. We moved. My baby was like 2 years old at the time, I think, or three, I can't remember. And we moved down. My wife was pregnant as well. Yes. We moved down just before the lockdown last year and moved to Houston. And then shortly thereafter, moving year, we've closed on, you know, deals close to, you know, quite a lot of deals actually this year, nearing 20 million. So, I wanted to mention that if you feel like you're listening to this and you're in LA or you're in New York City and you're like, oh, you know, my market is so hot right now, I can't find deals. The good thing, Jim Rohn talks about this all the time, you're not a tree, you can move.
Yes. And it's important to go where the money is. I mean, that what is the expression? I'm used to be a stockbroker years ago, and there was an expression then, which is let the trend be your friend. So in other words, you know, there are money moves and the smart money moves to areas. And I think the trick is really just to follow that, not to keep banging your head against the wall, trying to, you know, trying to, what is it? The other expression, hell is the definition of madness, is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome.
Exactly.
But that's great. So then, so you had your cohort, you had people that you were working with. And is that, are you now much more of a, I wouldn't say an individual, but are you now really pulling the strings for your own deals as opposed to being like a GP alongside other people?
Yeah. So in this industry, it's very difficult to do this by yourself, full stop. So to answer your question, yes. So on this deal that we've just closed on, I'm one of three GPs. So three people is still not enough to yes. to really, we have a property management company, thankfully, you know, to help us with the day-to-day operations. So I have no interest whatsoever to be just the main guy.
Yeah.
Because the work is just a lot. So you usually would have, you know, other partners. So right now I just have two other partners, actually, luckily, husband and wife team. We gel together and we just do most of our deals together. And, you know, I'm a big believer in having loyalty. I think that's a really big value for me. You know, just like if you have a wife, you're not just going to be going, you know, so you just have to choose a partner in business as well and just stay with that partner, right? As opposed to partnering with this person and then partnering with that person. And then I'm not saying it's right or wrong. For me as a value, I just rather just keep with just, you know, just same partner.
Because I think, again, my experience of real estate is that it has to be a very collaborative business. You cannot be all things to all people because, as you rightly say, there are so many moving parts in any real estate transaction. And I think the successful people are the people that partner up and have long-term business partnerships. Yes. I've seen some of these real estate partnerships that go back decades where they just amass huge amounts of experience within 100%. their partnerships, which gives them the ability to do deals that work. Because, I mean, tell us a bit about some of the pitfalls, some of the mistakes that people make when they don't have the benefit of that experience.
I could write a book on this, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm just trying to write a book, so I'm just going to need some ideas.
I think, number one, I think the intangible part of business gets lost, right? And I think we don't talk about that enough. Like, I can bombard the listeners with like technical and you know, jargon and cap rates. But like, that's great. But do you know how to deal with people? Do you know how to use your words, you know, for war? Because business is war, right? As subtle as it might be or might seem, it is war. On our last deal, we had 12 other competing offers, and we won that deal, right? And I joke with people that I actually wrote a poem to the seller, right? I didn't call it.
Ha ha, we won. Ha ha, we won. We won. Ha,
oh, well, no, this was before we won.
We won,
this
you
was
lost.
Before we won. Right? Maybe that's why we won. But I think that intangible part of business and winning is so critical. And being aware of those things really helps you to get to where you're trying to get to.
So here's a question I can ask you that occasionally I get, you know, Brits on this podcast as well. And it's something that I found when I came over here, you know, 8 years ago, was that it is, despite all of the huge technological advancements, it's still very much, the business world seems to be very much driven by relationships, more so than I experienced in England. And that may be because I didn't notice what it was like when I was in England, because, you know, when you're in the place, sometimes you can't see. But do you feel that over here, that it's, in some respects, it is more old-fashioned, mano a mano, dealing with people that you know, like, and trust? That's more the case. Is that what you found?
100%. I'm in a business where we're buying large assets, okay? So this is not like going to buy, you know, a tiny house down the street. But the gatekeepers in our industry are called brokers, not real estate agents, brokers. So these guys wake up every day to get large apartment owners to sell their asset.
Yeah.
That's a craft, right? That's multiple steak dinners, you know, like really, you know, keeping relationship with these owners. So I have to keep relationship with the brokers.
Yes.
With the same method, right? Calling, dining,
yeah,
golfing, right? So that part cannot be skipped. And in our industry, there are different categories of deals, right? There could be something we call listed deals, which is it gets blasted out. Everybody sees the property. And there's some we call off-market deals, which is they haven't blasted it, but some groups have seen the property.
Yeah.
And then there's something called off-market, which is like you're the only person looking at the deal.
So if you let the guy win when you took him to play golf, that's when you get the off deals. Yeah.
Exactly. The reason that I'm bringing this up to your question is 100%. 100%. It's relationship based, is what you know and who you know, completely unfair business.
But it's not unfair because you were able through, it's sort of a meritocracy to a certain extent. So it's not quite the sort of country club closed shop that some people may think, because if through your own determination and desire to succeed and your own ability, you're able to build those relationships. And that's a good thing. I mean, do you agree?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's an element of luck as well. And there's also the fact that someone like me understand the room that I find myself in, America, and the system. It's a strictly capitalistic society. You have to understand the game that you're playing, and you have to make sure you're in that game positioned to win.
But
I'm saying a lot.
So you're creating your own luck to a certain extent.
Yes, it's exactly right. So, and I say this because I think this is really important as well. So that's how I think I've got into the spot I found myself. You know, my partners are, you know, a Chinese couple that I met at a conference last year. So it's like you got to be in the right rooms, in the right place, understanding different people, and putting together different types of people. Like
speaking as an immigrant myself,
exactly.
I find that one tends to pay more attention because you're in a different environment to the one that you've been used to for all your life. You listen more, you pay attention to detail, you don't take things for granted. And do you find that as well? And I think that's quite helpful because then, whereas other people may simply go in with expectations, if you go in with no expectations or with, you know, completely sort of blank canvas, do you think that helps? Because is that advice that you can give people? In other words, just, you know, pay more attention to other people, listen to other people, before you deluge them with your own thoughts?
100%. I mean, especially as you're moving up the economic ladder, right? In America, you have to pay attention. And that's why I've been heavy on this subject. You have to understand what you're trying to achieve and how you need to get there. So for my business, there are two things that matters: finding deals and finding equity, capital. two things. That's all.
Yeah.
When you wake up to when
the deals
you sleep,
and the
that's
money.
All that matters. Yep. The deals and the money, right? So I picked one in the beginning, right? Which was finding the capital. And then I realized, okay, I can get the capital, but I may not have good deals. So then I changed again to finding the deals. And then I have, you know, partners that can help with the equity. So I think it's really paying attention to little things like that in your business and could make or break you, yes. Right? And understanding the philosophical concept of patience.
Yes.
Right? You know, I'm in my 30s, right? And most people just think, I'm going to do a business for like 5 years. If it doesn't work, I'm going to quit. Like, no, you're not. Like, you're going to quit when you die. Like, yeah. That's the determination that I had, like, that I have to make this work. And that's what happens. It does work.
Well, I found that too, that in my experience, the most overriding success factor is that ability to be determined and tenacious and see the deals through rather than, you know, just give up on some technicality.
Mm-hmm. 100%. 100%.
Time to move on, I think, talking about giving up on technicalities. I have in my hand, Ola Dantis, a piece of paper that says Hooked on Startups Quickfire Questionnaire.
Let's do it.
Are you sure?
I cannot wait.
Okay, because they're very, very, very difficult questions. Right. Okay, deep breath. Question number one. What is your favorite word?
Equanimity.
Say that again.
Equanimity.
I'm going to have to spell that for the... It's a fabulous word. I know exactly what it is, but it's... Gosh, I mean, that takes a certain amount of practice to be able to pronounce that. So I can see why it's your favourite word. I can't actually say it because I haven't got my teeth in today. These are someone else's. I'm running in for them. So, so question number two, what is your least favourite word?
Can't.
Can't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, same. I know. It's a very short word that just delivers... A vast sea of emptiness. Question three, what are you most excited about right now?
For some reason, I'm so into my kids. I've got two girls, 4 and 1. I just love watching them play, cry.
What do you mean blah. For some reason? They are your children. That is the reason. Newsflash.
You would have experimented, you know, say like a deal or I just... I'm
no. It could be anything. No, I mean, it's yeah. Fantastic. Yeah, I mean, that's...
I am enjoying my kids right now, just watching them grow and like they're just getting tall every day like a wee. It's just...
Amazing. No, I mean, I too have young children and it's killing me because they are growing so fast.
So fast.
And you
yeah.
Know, so it's... the each moment is so precious. Anyway, question number four, what turns you off right now?
These are really good questions, by the way. What turns me off? Sluggishness. Sluggishness slash, can I have two? Slash lack of common sense. As a business owner, I'm not seeing a lot of common sense sometimes. I'm like, oh, come on. You're so slow and you don't have your lack of common sense. Come on, let's go.
My favorite word in that space is fatuous.
Oh, interesting.
You know, it's like, why couldn't you do the deal because of this? That's just a fatuous. I think I'm trying out different words. Like you try... pants or shoes, you know. Just, anyway, question number five. What sound or noise do you love?
That is a good one. None. I meditate every day at 5 a.m. and I've got this Apple AirPods and you can actually silence, just not no sound whatsoever.
Silence is golden. So question six, what sound or noise do you hate?
The cry of my little daughter.
it depends. Yeah, I know what you mean. Particularly when it's 3 a.m. or something. Yeah. Question number seven. Now, you may plead the Fifth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution on this question. What is your favorite curse word?
Can I swear on this?
Yeah, of course. No one's listening, so we're absolutely fine. Yeah, that's it. It's not actually, it's the apostrophe, it's uck, you know. You know, and you gotta do the neck movement.
You gotta do the neck.
Yeah. And you can say Rodney, think, oh, you know, Rodney. That's good. No one will understand that. So that was a reference to Only Fools and Horses. Another episode all in itself. Question number eight. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
That is so good. That is so good.
These aren't my questions. I stole them, but yeah. Anyway, carry on.
A stand-up comedian, actually.
Oh, yeah, very good. And question number 9, what profession would you not like to attempt?
Jeez, I don't want to be like a garbage man. I don't know, that's just, I have a high level of disgust.
But we used to call them dustbin men in England. And remember, yes, when I was a kid, we used to leave them like 20 bucks at Christmas, because otherwise, if you didn't, they wouldn't empty your bins properly. But I remember in the olden days, before the trucks that would pick up the bins for you, you'd have these huge guys who'd sort of pick up these 500-pound trash cans and throw them in the back, and, you know. Mm-hmm. So, I can see that. I mean, particularly in the big cities, you don't really want to be anywhere near other people's stuff. No, yes. I can see that. Yes. There isn't a set of rubber gloves on earth that can insulate you from that sufficiently. But anyway, Olodentus, my final question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates? I know, it's a cracker.
It's a good one. What would I like God to say? Man, that's such a good one. I guess I want to hear him say, welcome, Olodentus.
What if you got your name wrong? It's like, no, it's not. It's Olodentus. For God's sake. Oh, I mean, sorry. No offense.
Well, that'd be a good start to get to heaven. Whatever happens, I don't want to go to hell. I heard it's not really nice there. So
yeah. I don't know. It's a tricky one to answer. But listen, last question. How do people get in touch with you and find out what you're doing with Dwellin? And how do people find out about your podcast that you have? And where's the best place?
Yeah, so I'm pretty ubiquitous on the internet, Olodentus. Just Google me or just go to the site right here, investwithola.com. If you're not watching the YouTube video and you're just listening, it's investwithola.com. If you're on Instagram and you just, you know, you're into Insta, I'm there. Just find me, Olodentus. You cannot miss me. I'm everywhere.
Fantastic. Thank you. It's been such a pleasure having you on. Great to meet you. And looking forward to staying in touch and following your progress. Once again, Ola, thank you for being on.
Likewise. Thank you so much. I appreciate you, sir.